This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
the award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
This is Saturday Magazine.
And you are listening to Saturday Magazine with Bronwyn and Tass. And don't forget, the donation drive is on. Every $10 you donate gets you one entry into a draw to win one of our most amazing prizes.
Yes, because even though we are on air, we don't run on air.
That's absolutely right. Now, Bronwyn, what studio are we in?
We're in the Macamobile, aren't we?
No, that's the chair, Bronwyn.
Oh, I'm in the Big Mac's chair. And I said before, you know, that even though I'm only a little happy meal, I'm channeling the Big Mac.
No, Bronwyn, well, we're actually in the Singer Smith studio.
Yes, we are.
We have
the Singer, real man, the man.
Singer of the Singer Smith duo here in the studio. Good morning, Gary.
Morning, Tass. Morning, Bronwyn. And morning, everyone.
It's so good to have you in the studio.
How do you get a studio named after yourself?
I don't know. You have to ask Joy. I mean, I think we've given a long-term support to the station. We believe that Joy is a very important organisation in the gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender community. And without it, a lot of people's lives would be really affected.
I can testify to that. You know, I know people for whom Joy is the lifesaver. It's the community. It's their sense of identity and belonging, and it's very important to their health and well-being.
Well, yes, and it's open 24/7. And if when I was growing up there'd been something like Joy, my life might have been different. And that's what both Jeffrey and I feel. That's why we see it as the most important gay organisation.
Your support for this organisation has been absolutely fantastic. I mean, when I think of Joy, I often think of, you know, because it's a studio that we always use, and I always think of you and reflect
Thank
on
you.
the great support that you've provided. Now, that's not what we're really here to talk about today.
No.
What we're really here to talk about, other than your great philanthropy and your great advocacy and the great work that you've done, is really the whole sort of policing issue in Victoria. So next month we're going to be celebrating 20 years of...
25.
25?
25
years. The 7th of August 1994 was the Tasty Nightclub.
Right? Ah, no, I'm going back a little bit.
Right.
Or forward.
Forward. So I'm talking about what happened after that, which is the beginning of the Victoria Police merging a relationship with the LGBTI community. So Tasty had happened. Mm-hmm. It was a major factor that contributed, and I want to talk about that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But beyond that, the Victorian Police then embarked on a strategic program of engaging with the community going forward. So we're going to celebrate the 20-year anniversary of that. And we've got the Police Commissioner coming in to talk more about that and a number of the Globe police officers. But I thought it'd be interesting to ask you to reflect on what did happen 25 years ago.
And how it changed things.
And how it's changed things, and also, you know, what have we learned from it, and what can we predict going forward?
Well, there's a lot of questions there.
Yeah, well, let's do one at a time.
Do you want me to go into a description?
A lot of people
What happened. Yeah.
Okay, well, we were at the Tasty Nightclub on the 7th of August 1994, along with 467 patrons.
So you were there dancing?
You were there dancing, having a drink. You know, we'd been out to dinner. We were with a group of, you know, four other friends. Both Jeffrey and I were there. And then suddenly at about 11 o'clock, the lights came on and there was a lot of noise. No one knew what was happening. There was all these who turned out to be plainclothes policemen, but plainclothes people running around, screaming, barking orders at people, yelling through microphones, put your hands against the wall, stand against the wall, and if you're in the middle of the room, because not everyone could get against
the
wall,
near a wall.
Put your hands on your head. And then we found out that it was a police raid looking for drugs. So we didn't understand the process of what was happening, and you know, and you were told you couldn't speak, you had to be silent, no one could talk to each other.
And of course, none of you had mobile phones in those days.
No. No one had mobile phones, otherwise...
Could you film the police doing this?
Well, exactly. And so we just... You know, we stood there, didn't know what was happening. And then, you know, the rumour mill goes around, you know, people whispering. And if you were talking, you were told to shut up. And we understood that we were going to be all strip searched as we left the premises. And no one would be able to leave the premises unless they were strip searched.
Jeez.
So that was pretty horrific because it took many hours, I mean about 5 hours, to strip search 467 patrons. The men were strip searched in the cloakroom, what was the cloakroom, which was basically, it wasn't a very flash club, an open area to a lot of other people. So you were stripped six at a time, six boys, six men at a time, boys, men at a time, in view of each other and in view of quite a few other patrons. So you had to take off all your clothes, your socks, your underwear, and bend over, and a torch was shone up, you know, your anus. I mean, looking for drugs.
So it's amazingly confronting and
humiliating.
Intrusive.
It was horrific. And the women,
in the 90s, and people go, oh, my God, that was in the 90s.
1994.
And
the women were taken into a small office and they were strip searched two at a time. And because the police didn't expect any women to be at this club, they didn't have any women police officers to strip search the ladies, so they had to wait a while to get a couple of police officers in, and then they were strip searched again in the process. So it was a humiliating, insulting, dreadful experience that wouldn't have happened but for it being a gay club. And you know, the interesting, you know, when we left, we were so, I mean, we were shell shocked and really angry. And you know, being a lawyer, I said, this is a nightmare that most of my criminal clients describe, where you've got police brutality and the police attacking a whole group of innocent people. And normally it's only one victim and a large number of police. So the story, there's not enough people to tell the story.
Gary, clearly this has not left you. I mean, you're telling the story like it happened last night.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's obviously left a huge impact on you.
Yeah, it has. And it, I mean, it's, you know, I think it, in some ways adversity, it's what you get out of adversity. It makes you a stronger person.
Yeah, where you take it.
But a lot of people, and... You know, because I also ran the case against the police.
So this is the class action, so you led that?
It was an individual sort of... It was described as a class action, but really it was an individual actions on behalf of each person. And, you know, we ran that, and that was... You know, it was fought really heavily by the police. And that... And I mean, I just want to go back to something about the club and your comment, Bronwyn, about mobile phones. There were no mobile phones. There was only that one photo taken by a photographer who snuck out his camera and took that photo, which went on to The Age the next day. And
I remember the photo.
So that was the only sort of physical
photo taken on the night.
Yes, people, I remember that.
That's inconceivable today. Yes, we've all got a camera on us.
Yeah, that's right.
And that photo, that, you know, one of those people in that photo was identified, and they suffered a lot of homophobia in their family, in their group. So
they were outed.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of people outed. And that there were... Running the case, I mean, I spoke to a lot of people who had been there, and there were a lot of really, you know, there weren't individuals who were strong and self-confident like myself and my friends, but there were individuals who were exposed. There was one person who got hate mail from their mother afterwards. There was people from a small town. Well, there's one person from a small town in Tasmania, and the whole family was ostracised in Tasmania because their son was outed.
This is 25 years ago. 25 years ago. That's in our lifetime, Bronwyn. Yeah.
And it was... Absolutely. I mean, the stories about, you know, some of the things that happened. One young man who was, in fact, the worst affected, he went out and became sexually... He just felt so worthless. He went out and became... You know, more sexually promiscuous, practiced unsafe sex because he felt so worthless, and contracted AIDS. And he was, I mean, it's.
So who took responsibility? Was there ever any acknowledgement by the police that it was the wrong call any apology?
Yes, there was an apology 20 years afterwards.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah. Mm. 20 years afterwards by. Lucinda Nolan, who was the acting commissioner, she, down at the World Trade Center, made an apology to the gay and lesbian community, and in particular, all the people who were at the nightclub on that night. And that was a heartfelt apology, and it took 20 years. Mm. 20 years is better than...
I raise it because I was at Adelaide University when Professor Duncan was found in the river.
Right.
And you know that story well. It's a very... and I don't think there's ever been honesty or... It's never really been resolved, has it? I mean, everybody absolutely believes that, you know, that area of the River Torrens was, you know, frequented by police who were looking to do bad things. And there has always been a view that the police were involved, but no resolution, you know, and that's in our lifetime too. It was, you know, when I was at university.
Yes, we're a bit older than some of the other people.
A little bit older,
But there was also those huge number of cases in Sydney where the, you know, it was a beat above the gap. And a number of people were thrown off, and the police never investigated. And there's that American family who are agitating. I can't remember the name, but I'm sure someone out there will know the name. And it has been covered up. I mean, it's in my lifetime that homosexuality became legal.
Legal, that's right.
And that's
right.
In the mid-70s.
If you've just tuned in, we are chatting with Gary Singer, on Saturday Magazine this morning. So, Gary, you've just reflected on your experience in the Tasty Raid itself. Tell us about the court experience and tell us about how the police behaved.
Well, it was very interesting. When we issued the proceedings, we issued for six plaintiffs to begin with, and the first writ which got to the court was this wonderful girl, Sally Gordon, who was our test case. And she, you know, she's become a good friend after the case. And she was an incredibly impressive witness. But what was so astounding about this case was the way the police fought it. We had 41 police officers come into court and basically lie and said everyone was happy, it was wonderful, wonderful experience for everyone. We had
having a torch on up your ass is not a happy experience. No. I'm sorry.
Exactly. But it's the classic police trying to, you know, box everyone into a corner and not tell the truth. We had
and make people frightened because they are the ones in authority. They've got all the power. You haven't got any power.
Correct. Well, we had 467 witnesses, and we didn't have to call them all, but we called quite a smattering of witnesses, and the judge, you know, delivered a very astute judgment. And because, I mean, politically, because the amount that was awarded was probably less than we would have expected, because the judge was thinking, there are 467 plaintiffs out there. This is going to cost the Victorian government and the police force a hell of a lot of money, which it did. And that, you know...
I bet they spent more on lawyers, though.
They would have. They spent a lot on... You know, they lost the case, they had to pay us. But they would have spent a fortune on lawyers, a fortune on court time. I mean, it would have been better if they'd come in and said, look, we've done the wrong thing.
Okay, we stuffed up. Yeah,
let's settle and have some conversation. Well, we had no offers of settlement, and we then had to fight for every other person. And
what was the grounds they were fighting? What, a legitimate law and order thing against drugs? Yeah, and by the way, it was just a coincidence that it was a gay nightclub.
Yeah, exactly. And really, we had. They also argued we had the power to detain people and to strip search them on the premises. Well, the search warrant doesn't give you those powers. It doesn't give you the power to search each and every person.
So they didn't actually have the power to do that.
That's exactly right. Because you can't. You could have a search warrant to search the premises, but you couldn't search each and every individual without making a a decision about each person. I mean, if you're stopped on the street, you can be, searched. But they have to make a decision on reasonable grounds.
So, Gary, moving forward 20 years, you got an apology. What's the apology worth? I mean, it's symbolic, it's nice, it's all that sort of stuff, but what's it really worth? What does it mean?
That's an interesting question. Look, I think it's really important. I think apologies are really important. It's acknowledgement of wrongdoing.
I'm not underestimating that, but what does it really mean?
Well,
I think it's right. First of all, you got to say, I stuffed up. I got it wrong. Yes. I'm sorry. You know, rather than defending, we were just doing our job.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're finding a movement forward where people are acknowledging homosexuality, intersex, transsexual people a lot more. I mean, we see a lot of bad things happening, but we still, I think we're moving forward. And positive change is always very slow. And we've seen that with the marriage debate. Everything is slow. And there's a great sign up on the the RSL on Anzac House on Collins Street, which says the price of freedom is ever vigilance. And that is true.
Yes.
I was thinking about it when I was coming in here. That is the truth of the matter. And we see we have to be vigilant about what's happening in our community because it can change. And it's changing everywhere.
Yeah.
And it's changing for the worse. And, we can't rest on our laurels.
So moving forward, do you think that this could happen today?
Yes. I mean, you didn't think it would happen, Taz, in 1994.
No,
I mean,
And, of course, it does happen around the world, as we're reminded.
But I'm talking about here, Victoria. I mean, could it happen again?
I would hope that it wouldn't, but I never thought it was going to happen in 1994.
Yeah.
So I can't say it couldn't happen today. I mean, it was a...
Yeah, because that was 20 years after the legalisation.
It was a rogue... I mean, the police sergeant who got the search warrant had been drummed out of the Western Australian Police Force. I mean...
So what was the motivation? I mean, because you can go and do a drug raid anywhere. So what was the motive? Was it really a drug raid?
Well, it was,
or was it an act of just profound...
Well, it was a, I mean, if it was a drug raid, it was a drug raid of profound incompetence. Because no one was convicted of a drug-related offence. I mean, let's get these things in perspective. I mean, what a waste of resources. The one person who we defended was charged with having drugs and they turned out to be Panadol.
Oh, dear.
I mean, that was... That was the only person I think who was...
So do you think it was discrimination, homophobia?
Totally. There's no doubt...
Motivated by... Totally.
I mean, the way it was carried out, the way it was... I mean, why was it a gay nightclub? Why wasn't it... I mean, there's thousands of nightclubs in... Not thousands, but there's a lot of nightclubs in Melbourne where there could be drugs as well. And even more today. I mean, drugs are a much bigger scourge in our society today than they were 25 years ago.
So what good things have the police done? I mean, I know they've set up liaison units and, can we give them any ticks?
We can. Yeah. Look, we're going to give them an A for effort and for trying. And their attitude, I mean, the attitude at the top has changed, I'd say.
Yes, well, of course, Christine Nixon, was considered to be quite radical turning up at the Pride March.
In the last month we had the current police commissioner here in this very studio
exactly
talking about... the botched up event that occurred here on Johnson Street a few weeks ago, just above Hares and Hyenas. And he went to great lengths to come in here and spell out to our community that this was not a case of homophobia. This was something that had gone terribly, terribly wrong. There's just a shocking set of coincidences that took place. So it was very encouraging to hear him say that and to actually take time out of his weekend to come here into the studio and speak directly to our community.
I think that's very important, and I think that probably wouldn't have happened 25 years ago. And,
no.
And, when I was preparing for coming in today, I looked at an old clip of the police commissioner who was Neil Comrie at the time, but he was very circumspect about what he was saying. He didn't come out and say, everyone's stuffed up.
No, he's defending his members.
What was the government's response?
That sort of stuff, yeah.
Well, Jeff Kennett actually came out and said it looks dreadful. He was quite condemnatory of the police, and he said we're not going to give them extra money to fix this up. They'll have to do it out of the police budget. So it was a big hole in the police budget over those few years that we ran those cases.
Did that mean the relationship between the police and government was tense for a while?
I don't know. I'm not able to comment on that one. But I mean, it was.
And where was the police union, by the way, in all of this? I guess defending their members.
Well, probably. I don't know that they really came out.
They didn't. They weren't. They weren't particularly relevant. So, what more needs to happen, Gary? I mean, how can? So you've said you're not absolutely confident that something this couldn't happen again. Is it legal? Is it cultural? Is it, you know, what more?
I think we've got to, as I said, I think we've got to be ever vigilant. We've got to always be watching out. We've got to be working. We've got to stop homophobia when we see it. We've got to call it out for what it is and not be afraid. It's like all those issues you were talking about, family violence before. We've got to turn it around because we're seeing in the whole world a move to conservatism, to the right. We're seeing changes, you know, scary changes in America to abortion laws.
Winding back, the winding back.
And we just have to be wary. And that can happen at any time, anywhere. And that's why organisations like Joy are so important. And the role that Joy played at that time was it gave us an opportunity to communicate with a lot of people because there were 467 people there. A lot of them were isolated. There were individuals who weren't part of a gay group. They were out for the first time. They were, you know, in
travelled from the outer suburbs or the regions.
Exactly, or overseas, interstate. And Joy was the cement that, you know, was the beacon that allowed us to contact a lot more people. So we were able to contact a lot of people to come in and talk to us about the raid because of Joy. And that is a salient
absolutely
message.
Absolutely.
So do you think, I mean, there weren't any GLOWs, as they're called, the gay lesbian police officers back then. They are all over the place now. I think every region has a couple of them at least. Has that made a difference?
Oh, I'm sure it has. And I think I mean, it's acknowledging, it's accepting that people are different. And look, there are always rotten apples everywhere and there are good apples everywhere as well. And generally the good apples outweigh the rotten apples in a barrel, but the rotten apples can do a lot of damage.
They can contaminate. I mean, that's the whole image, isn't it? Just need one rotten apple in the barrel, and if you don't fish it out, it'll contaminate the whole barrel.
Exactly.
Gary, thank you for coming in today and telling us your story. It's been a fantastic conversation. I hadn't actually heard most of that, to be honest. I mean, I recall where I was in 1994. I was actually at the Laird that night, and I was with a bunch of mates, and we were debating whether we would go to Tasty because it was the new kid on the block at the time.
Where was it?
It was on Flinders Street.
Flinders Lane.
Yeah, you entered through Flinders Lane. It was the old Commerce Club, which has now been pulled down and a hotel or something.
And I was this far from going there myself. And waking up on Sunday to the Sunday Age front page
that
story
picture,
and that picture was very startling. It was like, my God, we've been attacked.
Exactly. And I think everyone felt that way, and it was good that the media was supportive of reporting it too.
Gary, thank you for your time. Thank you for your support. Thank you for what you do for the community. Thank you for what you do for Joy.
Absolutely.
And thank you for being you.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for having me here. I've loved being here.
It's an absolute pleasure.
I love your show. It's always interesting because that is one of the great things about Joy is the current affairs that you talk about. You talk about issues that are so important and so relevant. So thank you.
That's a great vote of support. Thanks a lot, Gary. Thanks.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.